Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we have exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And tonight I am very excited and honored to have Katarina Wilson. Katarina Wilson is actually a UFO abductee, and she has written several books about her experiences. Her first book is called Alien Jigsaw, and this chronicles the first 34 years of her life and her experiences with UFOs and extraterrestrials. And this was followed up by the Alien Jigsaw Researchers Supplement in 1994, and then she began doing research into MILABs, or military abductions, and wrote another piece called Project Open Mind, Are Some Alien Abduction Government Mind Control Experiments. But what we're going to talk about mostly tonight is her latest book, which is titled I Forgot What I Wasn't Supposed to Remember, An Expanded View of the Alien Abduction Phenomena. And guess what, guys? It's actually been released online for free. So you can download it at www.alienjigsaw.com. Now, Katarina Wilson is actually been very active in UFO research for many years and served as a MUFON state section director and a member of the Intruders Foundation and the Fund for UFO Research, and is actually a MUFON benefactor, a lifetime member. So she's been a very powerful force in UFO research, and we're lucky to have her on tonight. Katarina, thank you for coming onto the show.
Hi, Preston. Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
I'm very excited.
Nice introduction, too.
I can barely hear you, so if you can speak up as much as possible, that would be great.
Okay.
But, thank you so much for coming onto the show. I mean, wow. I've had a lot of guests, but I'm really, really honored to have you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that, and I want to congratulate you on your latest book, and I can't wait to read it. You are a very prolific writer.
Yeah. Well, once this subject has you hooked.
Yes.
So you've been having these experiences for a long time. So, and with most people, of course, it stretches back to childhood, and that appears to be true with you. When did you first realize that you were having, I guess, unusual experiences would be the word for it?
Well, I had some really unusual, what I thought were dreams and flying dreams and things when I was a child, and some of them were so vivid that they just stayed with me throughout my young adult years. But it was really in my late 20s when I realized, when I kind of put two and two together, realized that it that these weren't just vivid memories or dreams, that these were actually memories of experiences that I'd had. And part of what helped me along was keeping a journal. So that was really important, because I had written down these dreams and experiences, and so being able to go back and review that after kind of putting two and two together really helped me sort it out.
All right. So that was the late 1980s, 88 or 89 around?
Yeah, it was I kind of call it an awakening. Mine happened in the year 1987 to 88. Kind of 86 to 88 were the two big years. It was a real gradual process.
You know, that's when it happened to me, too. And it seems that there was a huge explosion of consciousness, I guess, or awareness of this phenomenon at that time. So I've talked to a lot of people, and that was like around when Whitley Strieber's book came out, I think, Communion.
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah, I know. It's just like this whole wave of us were kind of woken up at the same time, and I think there's a reason for that, and I think it's kind of continuing to happen, and there's like another younger group that's awake and, you know, talking, and they seem to maybe be handling a little bit better, because it's been out there for a while. And, you know, like people like Hopkins and Jacobs, who kind of paved the way for abductees to go public, we're kind of helping to pave the way for these other new experiencers. So that's kind of the way I look at it anyway.
Right. Well, there's still only like a few books about abductions by people who have had abduction experiences. if you know what I mean, like yours.
There's not a lot, but there are more than people might think. I published a list of books by abductees, and in my new book, under the in one of my later chapters, what can you do? And one of the things that I want people to know they can do is to support abductees. And one of the things they can do to support us is to just read the books and learn about the experience, because there's a reason why we all felt compelled to write our books and share our experience. And I believe it has something to do with waking up humanity on a larger level.
Right. No, you talk about having a sense of a mission, and that's something I can totally relate to. I haven't gotten involved in this phenomenon. I wouldn't call myself an abductee, I guess. But I've definitely had a lot of sightings and weird experiences that make me feel like they're aware of what's going on and manipulating the situation to a certain degree.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And my list, you know, is not very long, because it was books, written by abductees or specifically, you know, about them. And there's probably more than people think, but there really aren't too many when you put in the context of publishing.
Right, right. Well, it's definitely changing. I mean, this subject is really beginning to explode. So, did you see UFOs growing up then?
I had my first overt sighting when I was 16 years old, and there was a sighting of three, what I call back then, hamburger-shaped craft. They had lights around the midsection, and they were silver-gray in color, and I had this little telescope that I was going to be an astronomer when I grew up, so I had a little telescope, and I watched them with my telescope, and I was out in the cul-de-sac with all my friends, you know, the neighbor children, and just all the kids were out there watching these things, and I was 16. I went to school the next day. I thought the whole world had changed. And apparently, I was the only one dumb enough to talk about what I'd seen. So everybody kind of looked at me funny, and I realized that, oh, okay, I'm probably not supposed to talk about this stuff. But it was a life-changing event for me, like it is for almost everybody that has such a clear sighting like that.
Well,
and that was in 1976.
Did you talk to the other people who were there? They didn't want to talk about it either?
Well, most of them were kids that I babysat for, which was really strange. And they, you know, as they grew up and the families left the neighborhood, so
right.
I, you know, when I got to be an adult, realized, wow, that was a big thing. I'd love to talk to these kids, you know, now that they're adults. Haven't really been able to track anybody down.
Wow. So, I mean, what inspired you to write your first book? I mean, Alien Jigsaw, this is at the point you probably realized that you were having a lot of experiences. I mean,
I tell you, the first time somebody suggested it, I just went, oh, no way in the world am I going to be dumb enough to do that. And it was another 3 years when, that was a MUFON investigator that suggested that, and then 3 years later, another MUFON investigator 3,000 miles away suggested the same thing. And it kind of boiled down to my feeling that what I had heard and read didn't, you know, there were some things that were being omitted and in the case studies, and I kind of felt, no pun intended, but I felt a little alienated.
Right.
So I just felt like I had to share this information, and although I didn't put this in the first book, I've been kind of sitting on it until I guess the fourth or writing venture I just did. But I was actually told telepathically by what I believe were these beings that I had an important mission to accomplish, and that I was a type of emissary for them. And I, you know, didn't really want to tell anybody that, because I didn't want it to sound like, oh, I think I'm special, because I'm not. It's just I realized today that there are a lot of abductees that are acting like as emissaries. I just call them abductee emissaries, that are just working between, I think, the humans and their human, from their humanity, and the aliens, and just trying to get this information out in whatever way they can.
Right, right. Well, I had Jim Sparks on the show, and he said as much. He also has a lot of conscious UFO experiences. A lot of the people I've interviewed also feel that really a thin sense of a strong mission. And they also talk about, you know, the future of Earth, like you talk about in your book.
It's very powerful. I mean, it's you just, your whole life kind of changes, and you do feel a sense of mission. And one of the things, you know, that some of us can do is to publish our experiences and talk to people, or have a website and just try to educate people, and just be helpful to other abductees that maybe don't feel so comfortable, you know, talking, and just kind of give them an outlet to know that they're not alone.
Right. Well, one experience I wanted to ask you about was when you had suffered a near lightning strike, and they repaired your heart. Could you describe that? Do you remember that?
Well, that was way, way back when. I'll never forget that. I'd kind of been warned ahead of time by one of the beings that this was going to happen, and I wasn't 100% sure when it was going to happen, but we were having a terrible storm. I was living down the Gulf Coast, and everybody knows how bad these storms can be, and the squalls that come across, and the lightning and the storms they produce. And I went out to open the garage door for my husband. We had a little courtyard that separated the garage from the house, and I had this funny feeling that, you know, you probably shouldn't do this, but anyway, on the way back from opening the garage door for him, I heard an explosion, and I was at the base of the stairs. I had about maybe five or six stairs to go up to the porch, and I stepped on one of the stairs. I heard the explosion, and I just felt myself floating, and I thought I was dead. And I was back in the house, and I turned around, and lightning had struck the wall in the house in several places, and I had concrete block in my hair, and I felt very strange because I got caught up in that energy from the lightning strike. And I think, you know, having the kind of subconscious warning from these beings, and kind of not being right where it hit, because I hesitated and I said, something doesn't feel right about this, and maybe a little timing factor change there. But I really was surprised that I was even alive, and I kept questioning, what am I doing here? And then that night, the Grays came and operated on my heart. They said they were repairing my heart, and I knew that something had happened because of the lightning, my proximity to the lightning strike, and it was an incredible, you know, memory. It was an incredible experience for me, but I really feel that they did something to save me.
Right. Well, I certainly have heard of a lot of cases like that. I mean, that was the first book I wrote, was UFO Healings.
Yes.
And that included your case of one of like 100, and now there's at least 200 or 300.
That's, you know, and that's good to hear, because I know there's a lot of scary things that go on in these abductions, and
there are.
I don't think it's all bad, you know. So it's really good to hear positive things.
Well, and that's another thing I wanted to ask you about is, I mean, me personally, I kind of flip-flop on this now. People ask me, oh, are abductions, you know, bad? Well, certainly they can be, I think, but I don't know. Are the aliens evil? I'm not even really prepared to say that.
Yeah, no, I looked at my own experiences really carefully when I wrote the researcher supplement, and I went through every one of my experiences, and I categorize them as positive, neutral, negative. And the far more of my experiences, or the majority of my experiences, I categorize as neutral to positive. But, you know, I had some negative stuff happen, and you got to look at the fact that there are several different types or species of beings interacting with us, and some of them aren't so nice. So. But certainly there have been some just really fascinating and positive experiences I've had.
Well, it's amazing to me how so much of all this extraterrestrial activity on Earth is going completely unnoticed by at least half the population.
Yeah, that I will know. I just don't understand. I think it's got to be something to do with people, their consciousness just not being turned on, or their souls or consciousness not being aware. One of the reasons I feel like I can say that is because when I first saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind, I think what it was, that 1977, 78, and I don't know if I have that date right or not, but I think that's about the time it came out. But I watched that, and years later, I saw it again, and I never realized there were aliens in it. The first time I saw it, there were no aliens in it. So my mind was literally turned off to the fact that here I watched a movie that had aliens in it, and years later I watched it again, and I don't remember this ending. There were no aliens in the one I saw the first time. So if it can happen to me, I think it's happening to other people. It's like, I don't know, maybe certain people are kind of switched off or switched on at a certain time, or because of a certain stimulus, maybe, but I will never understand how I could not have seen or remembered beings in that movie. and there they are, you know.
Right. Well, it did have an expanded ending at one point, but the aliens were in both versions.
Yeah, they were. They were in both versions, and I have both versions, and to this day, I just laugh. It's like, how could that have happened? But obviously at that time, at that age, and that time in my life, I was not supposed to know about them. And when I did know about them, boy, you know, it kind of sidelines you.
Wow. So what was the awakening like for you? I mean, how did it all come together?
Well, it kind of, there were some just things, you know, the memories were there, the fear was there. The sensing this presence, you know, and the strange dreams that come out of, you know, that the memories that come out of your dreams sometimes, and I guess when, you know, like so many people, I picked up the book Intruders, and I don't know why I picked it up, but I did, and I know a lot of other people picked up the book Communion, but I never saw that book. I mean, I saw Intruders, and I bought it, and about 6 months later, I read it, and I knew what had happened to me.
Right.
And I remember handing the book to my fiance and my husband now, at the time, and I said, I think you need to look at this, and he read it, and you know, we knew, and so I answered. The Omni Magazine interview, Are You an Alien Abductee? I think is the title of it. And I sent that to Bud with a bunch of notes and little drawings. And he came down to the Gulf Coast area and interviewed me. And we did, I think, two hypnosis sessions. But I just don't remember anything really coming out of that ET related. Just some interesting missing time information came out.
Right.
So he ended up putting me in touch with a MUFON investigator who then interviewed me and put me in touch with a forensic psychologist. And I did a little more hypnosis. And but it was like after the first couple of sessions with Bud, the memories just started coming out. It's like he kind of unblocked something that, you know, some kind of, you know, mental block that I had. And it was like, okay, it's okay to talk about this. And just memories just started coming out way before I even worked with the psychologist, who was the late Dr. Overlate of Pensacola, Florida. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you've had a lot of just conscious experiences without hypnosis. Do you think the hypnosis allowed you to sort of face this and have conscious experiences?
Well, I think with Bud, it was like he kind of unlocked a door and I opened it, and everything just kind of flowed after that. And I did I did several sessions with Overlate, and we found, you know, there just, to me, there wasn't a lot of really new stuff. I was kind of just going over the conscious memories that I already had, and not really anything new was coming out. But, you know, I kept at it for a while, and then just, you know, said, okay, well, I think I've gone as far as I can go with that. And I just, One of the best things for me was keeping that journal, and I still keep one. Because if you write down what you remember right after it happens, you get it out. It's therapeutic. You get it out. It's like talking to somebody and just getting it off your chest. But if I had not written in my journal, I would not have remembered. You know, I go back and read my journal sometimes, and I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, it's like, how could I have forgotten that happened?
Wow.
And that's sort of what happened with this book. I had tried to get out of this and kind of thought, well, if I disappear and, you know, get out of this for a while, they'll leave me alone. And I still had experiences, and I kept the journal. But when I went back to read it, and when I finally decided to write the book, I went, oh, my God. You know, it was just, you know. And I just can't stress how important it is for anybody out there who's listening that's dealing with this to get everything on paper. Even if you think you can't draw it anyway. Draw what you remember, write what you remember, write how you feel about it. And then it's out, and then you can move on.
Well, that's what makes your books so amazing, is all your experiences are so carefully documented. And, I mean, it's amazing. One thing I wanted to ask you about, or there's one lady I interviewed. She had a car accident, and she says the ETs came and picked her up, and they took about an hour to repair her body and placed her back at the scene of the accident just seconds after it happened. So they told her that they actually time-traveled to do it. And another guy I interviewed also had a really bizarre experience where he was apparently taken back into his past, where they showed him his childhood, and then they took him to his future, where they showed him having a motorcycle accident, among other things. And
wow.
And you wrote a little bit about similar time things happening with you. So I was wondering if you could talk about that.
Yeah, it's, boy, I was really hesitant to put that in. I mean, there were a couple of things that happened where the beings actually put me to the past, and when I put that in the Alien Jigsaw, but just the time space chapter, I think I titled it, is about time, it's about space, you know, off that song.
All right.
I was really hesitant because that's to me the most far out stuff, and I don't really understand how it happens, but I swear to God, you know, it happened, and I don't understand it. I mean, I know that I've had experiences where I may have been gone for 2 or 3 hours here, but I was with them for like 2 or 3 days, and it's just I don't know. You can't really explain those kind of things. It's rare, but I did include a chapter about those types of experiences where, you know, I seem to have been taken to the future. See myself in the future. I see Earth in the future, and it's just incredible. And I've actually had a few other people email me, and you know, well, I've had that too, and I don't know if I'm an abductee, but I've had that too, and it just kind of, you know, that kind of little bit of validation. It's like, okay, well, maybe I'm not totally nuts on this, but because you know what happens to you during your experiences, but trying to share that with other people when it's that out there, I think that's really hard. So I'm hoping that chapter is going to read okay.
All right. No, I thought it was very, very interesting, and when I read it, and it reminded me of a lot of the people I've interviewed. Like the gentleman I mentioned earlier, he was not only shown himself having a motorcycle accident, he was shown visions of he said it, they looked like real. He said it was as if he was there.
Mm-hmm.
He saw disasters of various types, earthquakes, you know, tsunamis, and hurricanes, a lot of those mostly. And
I think that happens to a lot of abductees. And I think maybe it's kind of not really talked about as much because I don't think they realize how many other abductees or experiencers are having the same thing or experiencing the same thing. But it's incredible, and I've been shown a lot of future things about war, and it's scary, and I put that out there because it's like, well, maybe, you know, somebody else has seen the same thing, and if enough of us say this, maybe somebody in our government will actually pay us some attention and not take us in that direction.
Well, do you think it's like scare tactics used by the ETs to say, listen, this is the path you're on, and this could happen. It's not necessarily going to happen. Because it seems to me that there's been a lot of ET...
To me, what I've seen is they're very concerned about war. And about every 2 years, I get a major vision about an upcoming disastrous war. And it's going to cause a major transition on the planet, and it's going to affect everybody. But at the same time, it's like I know that with each decision humans make, they are kind of altering the path, and it could go that way, but it could get better. And I think time is, you know, it's like here's the path you're on. If you stay on this path, this is what's going to happen. But if we change it, then we have a chance of making it better, and hopefully not worse.
Right. It's a very volatile situation. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and tonight our guest is Katarina Wilson, and we're talking about her book, her online book, I Forgot What I Wasn't Supposed to Remember. Great title, which you can actually download for free at her website, which is www.alienjigsaw.com. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you, which I find really interesting, is about this whole hybrids and the apparent alien agenda, and are they coming to inhabit Earth with hybrids, which seems to be a popular or growing theme.
Yes.
I mean, are they walking among us already? I think so.
I think so, too. I kind of suspected it 12 or so years ago, but I really believe it today because I've heard some very strange accounts from other abductees, and I've even seen a couple in Target of all places that I just, you know, my husband and I were shopping one day, and this couple walked by, and we just looked at each other and stunned, you know. You know, we were just totally stunned. We didn't say anything because we knew what we were both thinking. But they were both close to six feet tall easily, probably maybe 6'2" or 3" even, the male and female. They looked identical. They had jet black hair and pale white skin. But, you know, everything looked normal, everything looked human. But they were so thin, and they looked like brother and sister, but they were holding hands, and they seemed like a couple. And it was... If I ever see him again, I'm going to talk to him or, you know, attempt to. But at the time, I felt compelled to go after them and talk, and then I stepped back and I thought, what if they're telepathic, you know? And then my husband and I just looked at each other and just they just kept walking, and it was just amazing. But I've heard accounts from other abductees that were even more unusual than that. So. And in my experiences, I guess, since I've been documenting everything, I have personally seen, and I know that Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs have also mentioned this, and some other, you know, other researchers that everybody knows, I'm sure, and you've probably seen this as well, that over the past 30 years that these hybrids are looking, appearing more and more human. And I've seen hybrids that are so human, you would not be able to tell them, you know, apart from us. And in the book, I give an example of this one where I actually had to touch him, you know, to tell that he wasn't, you know, I think it was a telepathic connection. And I looked at him and said, "You're not human." And I realized that it was a test. And they've tested me before on this throughout the years, but I've always known it was a test. This was the first time they tested me without telling me this is a test. It was like I had to figure it out on my own.
Wow.
And it was amazing. But I think, you know, I really believe that they're here. I don't know. I mean, some other things that have happened was like when I was asked to take this little hybrid young boy out in public. And this particular hybrid did not look human enough. And I put a ball cap on his head, and he didn't like that at all. I think he was, you know, he didn't like that. So I took it off, and I felt so uncomfortable. And I did everything that I was supposed to do leading up to that. And we were just going to leave the house. And that's all I have. That's all the memory I have. So I think it was a test to see if I would do it, but also a test to see if he was ready. And I was so afraid for his safety, because I knew that, you know, and I don't want to sound racist or anything when I say this, but he didn't look human enough. And I was afraid the other humans would hurt him simply because of his physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very, very scared and protective, and I know they picked up on that. So I think that one was more of a test. But, I mean, gosh, you know, it sure, everything that I've seen sure points to the fact that at least the hybrids want to live here or are coming to live here with us.
Right. Well, I've heard of several similar cases. I mean, I know of one case, I think, Ann Andrews, I don't know, who wrote a book about her son, Jason, where she actually had an experience where she was taken on board a craft and shown her baby, or her hybrid baby, and told to hold it and love it and all this, which is, of course, very familiar to researchers and abductees. And but later, years later, this child was actually taken to Earth and got to meet one of the relatives of her family and was given a message for her that he is still alive and well.
Wow.
So,
yeah,
and he was all dressed up in these bundled clothes and stuff with a cap. And that's almost true in a lot of these cases. They're walking around and they're all bundled up with sunglasses on and scarves. And
yeah.
So, I mean, this could be a subject of another book. It's really kind of interesting, but...
Oh, I think it'd be a great topic.
Right.
To put all these different cases, you know, together.
Another thing, you know, that fascinates me about your experiences, I mean, I've interviewed so many people, and I would say 50% or more, with their experiences, they see just these same simple type of grays, you know, 3-5 foot tall, and that's about it. And their experiences don't vary that much. But, you know, then there's something I would stress to a lot of people, because that's sort of, I think, people's popular view of what ET contact is just being taken on board a craft and examined, which is really not it at all.
Yeah.
It's much, much stranger and really varied for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems true for you. I mean, the number of beings you've seen, it's astounding to me. And this is one of the things that kept me out of UFO research, or even considering that UFOs were real, was that the ETs that I heard about were humanoid, and that bothered me. But, you know, eventually you're kind of stuck with the stories, and you have to accept the fact that this is what people look like, I guess.
Yeah, and I've seen one group that I think is underreported, or maybe not, maybe they're just better at not letting us remember, are the short, pudgy, dark-skinned beings. And it's funny, almost all the ones I've seen have been female. And I don't know if it's that the females interact with the female humans or the males interact with the male humans, but I did draw an illustration of two of those, and they're both females. They're different. They're two. One I call the short pudgy with the wrinkled skin, and the other one is just short and petite, but they have dark wrinkled skin as well. Very different eyes, though. Very different, and I tried to, you know, try to do it justice and draw them so that people could get an idea. But, you know, I would never believe this if I hadn't seen them, because I saw the movie Communion, and Whitley Strieber had an interaction. See, I didn't read that book at the time because I was going through this time where I wasn't reading, and I didn't want to contaminate myself. But I just said, no, this can't be real. That's got to be a Hollywood thing. And then several years later, I saw them. And I was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
And they didn't look exactly like the movie, of course, but they, you know, they really exist. And they're doing different things, I think, that I don't see them with the grays. I think they're just kind of doing their own thing. And I think there's several groups here that are doing their own thing.
Well, in your experiences, have you had any, like, individual ETs that have remained in kind of a relationship or, you know, you've seen over and over again?
Oh, yes. the first one that I had a lot of interaction with was what I call the blonde. He was, that's what I call him in all my books, and he's very human looking, but he, you know, he's also very ET, telepathic. I've seen him shapeshift. You know, I've seen him become energy and then have a physical body. I've seen him working with other humanoid types, like another one that I call the doctor. So these two particular beings I've had a lot of, repeat interaction with. The blonde, it's funny, when my husband and I got married, I only saw him about another year after that, and then I never, you know, I think I've seen him once in the past 20 or so years.
Huh. Wow.
And the doctor I still see from time to time, but it's been I remember him from when I was about seven or 8 years old, and I saw him about a year ago.
Have you changed at all in your memory?
Yeah, you know, it was a very, very sad kind of a reunion, because we were just sitting together, and he was, of course, much older, and he was going blind. He was almost totally blind.
Wow.
And he was very sad. I think I don't know if it was going to be the last time I'd see him, or maybe the last time he would see me, but he was actually crying and very, very sad, because I think it was because of his health and losing his eyesight, and I really felt for him. It was very sad, and I hope I see him again, because there's just some kind of connection there. It's almost been my whole life, so it's kind of like you can't help but be connected to these people, to these beings. I have a couple of drawings of him in my book that, he looks very, very human.
Right. Wow. So your husband's always been very supportive of this. What about your family?
Well,
and friends and stuff.
My husband's been great, still is. I don't know what I'd do without him. My family, they're aware of it. It's basically, well, I don't really remember this, but they haven't made fun of me or anything. And I don't talk about it, really. You know, I might mention it to my parents, and I think they feel a little more comfortable if I just say, well, it's just this paranormal stuff, you know, because I don't use the word alien that much anymore. But, you know, we talked about it, and...
Well, have they had sightings, your parents, or your grandparents?
My mother has, yeah.
Yeah.
She, you know, and I wrote in the first book, you know, when I just first broached the subject with her, I was talking about the Pascagoula case, Hickson and Parker, and I said, you know, I think those guys probably really saw something, you know, that what they saw was real. And, I think there's something to this. And out of the blue, she turns to me and she says, well, your father was probably an alien. And she'd never used the word alien, you know. She's German. I mean, she's not in her vocabulary. And I was like, why did you use that word? And she just looked at me and somberly said, well, because, you know, you've always been so different from your brother and sister. You know, you just turned out so differently from them. And, you know, she wasn't putting me down. She was just being honest and recognized that there was something different about me early on. I'm not, you know, she didn't go into a lot of detail, but, I mean, I'm a vegetarian, for crying out loud. She considers herself a failure because I don't eat meat. So I don't know, but, you know, they're aware. We don't dwell on it, you know.
Right. Well,
I don't want to make them feel uncomfortable, so...
Sure.
It's just not a subject that comes up a lot.
Well, another thing I have to ask about, of course, is your research into my labs and your experiences with that. Because, you know, in my research, I've run across it a few times, like with Melinda Leslie. I researched her case and wrote about it in my book, Extraterrestrial Visitations, and she had an abduction experience in Southern California here, where with her and her two friends, and they, it was typical in a lot of ways, But they saw this man in full Navy uniform just standing there watching this whole thing take place.
Right.
And this was on board the craft, and there were ETs there examining them and doing their thing. So I don't know what that means, other than to think that they're working together, which, of course, has been reported at Edwards Air Force Base, and let me see, China Lake. and at Rendlesham and a few other places. So
that was one of my favorite books, by the way, Extraterrestrial Visitation.
Oh, thank you.
I know of Melinda. I haven't met her personally, but I've been there. I've seen it. You know, I think one of the most fascinating things to me that kind of clicked in this latest book was being taken to a base in Alaska near the Arctic, and it was full of naval personnel in uniform, and it was just amazing. And
I don't remember
everything that happened, but I do know where I was and who I saw. And I've had a lot of this the MILAB stuff. I've had a lot of that happen, and it's crazier than ET. You know. I mean, it's the last thing people want to hear. So it's very controversial.
Would you say that you're more nervous about a MILAB abduction than a alien abduction?
Well, I don't know. You don't want to think your own people are going to do this to you, right? It's better. It's somehow more acceptable if an alien from another planet kind of, you know, intrudes in your life and does things that, you know, maybe you don't agree with. But, you know, for people that are supposed to play by the same rules, you just got to really wonder what's going on.
Well, in either case, I don't understand why they just don't knock at the front door and say, listen, you know, we'd like to do this or talk.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I, you know, you can't really do the subject justice in the short amount of time we have, but I did include a kind of edited version of a chapter from Project Open Mind in my book, and I titled it the chapter Military Abductions 101. And it just very basically and simply, you know, looks at possibilities. They either are or they aren't. Why, if they are, why are they doing it? And try to set that down very clearly before I get into these types of experiences that I've had. But, you know, I'm wondering if maybe the military isn't more involved in, you know, transport and liaison or, you know, providing the base for us to be taken, you know, the secret place for us to be taken to. You know, it's hard to explain, but I'm not trying to push the book, but I do go into a lot more detail where I hope it makes more sense. I don't view them all as being bad because of what they're doing. I think I come to the conclusion that there must be something that is just so important about our future that made them be able to justify to do this to some of us. I mean, not all abductees are having MILAB experiences, and not all MILAB abductees are, you know, having mind control experiences. It's not that way. I think there's just a certain subgroup of a certain group of abductees that, you know, we got their attention, or maybe the proximity, you know, we were in the right place at the wrong time. But it's controversial, and you know, I always keep in the back of my mind and try to say to people that, you know, if the hybrids are looking so human that maybe they're dressing up in military uniforms, and we're thinking we're seeing our military when it's really the hybrids. And for whatever reason they're doing that, might be to sow confusion or to scare us into, you know, doing what we're supposed to do or prepare us for some upcoming event. But you got to keep that, you know, in the back of your mind, too.
Right. There's definitely different possible theories. No doubt the military is involved in this some way, and I believe that they do have the craft and all this, and I do believe that aliens have been working with them to some extent.
Yeah, I do. I mean, you see aliens and the military together. You know you're on a military base. You know, you look around, you can say, yeah, I'm in a building, it's got linoleum floors, it's got concrete brick walls, you know, and you know what's terrestrial and what's not. And when you see this repeatedly throughout your life, you know, you got to draw the conclusion that, you know, although it's probably super highly compartmentalized, that there are certain military people and bases involved. And, you know, the only way you stay in the military is to obey orders. So,
Well, do you think
if you don't keep your mouth shut, you're not going to stay in the military very long. It's as simple as that.
Right. Well, do you think the UFO cover-up is going to end? Because the aliens could end it pretty much overnight by just doing a mass presence type of display.
They could, but, I know I would never believe this would come out of my mouth, but I think that if they did, that we'd just have total chaos. I think people would totally go nuts, I've gone over this scenario in my mind so many times because I keep seeing that, something's coming. There's just going to be this transition. Yeah, the hybrids want to be here. They're training them, trying to groom them to live among us. How in the world are they going to do that? What's going to happen that's going to allow that to happen, to take place? And I don't know. I go through some different theories, and I talk about this in my last chapter. And, I don't see your average person just welcoming this scenario.
Right.
We can't even get along with each other. I mean, how are we going to treat, hybrid beings? And how are we going to treat absentees, when all this comes out? Are they going to, are we going to be the new terrorists? Is UFOs going to be the new weapons of mass destruction? Are they going to, what's going to happen? So that's, I know abductees keep that in the back of their mind. Well, maybe we don't want this to come out. What's going to happen to us and what's going to happen to them? but at the same time, it's very frustrating because you're led to believe that, something's going to happen. It's going to be big. And when is it going to happen? It seems like it's getting closer and closer and closer. And everybody feels it's coming and it's involving the aliens in a big way. But we don't have a date, and we don't have a scenario. I'm not sure.
When I got involved in this field, it was always rumored on the horizon that there was going to be disclosure, and it never happened. It hasn't happened yet, but it seems to be happening in certain levels. I mean, there seems to be an escalation of the awareness of the phenomena, at least, if not the phenomena itself. And so many people are having these abduction experiences. When I first got involved in this research, I heard the Hynek quote that 1 in 40 people had been abducted. And this was before the Roper poll.
Right.
And I thought, no, I don't believe that because I know 40 people. I'm sure I know 40 people. And I'll just ask everyone I know, this is how I got started.
Oh, wow.
And I asked everyone I know, and that's when I got a real shock. I found that, I knew 5 abductees, basically.
Oh,
and
my God.
Within my circle, my close circle of family and friends.
Wow.
So
that's great.
I totally think this is really common.
Yeah. I think it's so much more common than I ever realized, for sure. I mean, let's see, my website went up in 1995, and there was, not a whole lot of information about this out there. Today, it's like you can go to chat rooms and just talk to people that are having experiences, and everybody's so much more open. And I think that's great. And, you got to credit the researchers that broke this, wrote the books, paved the way for abductees to write their books. And
right. Well, one day this subject is going to get a lot more respect, I think.
Yeah.
I really, really, really do.
I just hope nothing bad has to happen for it to come out,
All right. We still have like 5 minutes. Let me see what else haven't we covered. My goodness, though. Why do you think that ETs are here at all? I mean, why are they interested in human beings?
I think they've been interested in us for a long time, and I think certain groups have been here for a long, long time. I think it's just new for us to be able to finally consciously and in our social and religious view of the world to finally say, we're not the most important things in the universe, and there may be somebody else out there, but that, they're not just out there. They've been here. I think they've been here for a long time. I really do. And I think they've been kind of, maybe it's just been a very long genetic changing, I don't want to say manipulation, but a long genetic program that's been going on maybe longer than 30 or 40 years.
Right. Well, I think it's probably, who knows? Could be going on since biblical times because there's
theme.
Certainly
you you can interpret a lot of things that have been written in the Bible, the stories and the prophecies, the visions that, you know, flourish, you know, that's thousands of years.
So what about super conscious beings? What are they like? I mean, you mentioned those in your book.
Yeah, they're like one of the lifesavers of this phenomenon. To me, I think people probably interpreted them a long time ago as angels, and maybe some do today. But they appear to me usually as the males are usually elderly, very gentle, and the females are. What I describe them as is incorporeal beings that can manifest in a physical form. And I usually, my interaction with them is always always positive. When they show me visions, you know, that may not look too good about the future. I mean, that's not a negative thing. It's just they're trying to teach me something. And they've really been there for me during difficult times, and they interact with me sometimes, you know, when I'm going through a tough time, and I've gotten, several visions from them over the last couple of decades. But I start off with them in the book, actually, because I just wanted to start off with something positive, and I talk about some experiences involving them and some of the lessons. Some of the lessons also from them were in the time and space. They're the ones that show me and take me a lot of times to these, you know, futuristic spaces, and that's, you know, they're neat.
Right.
They're really neat beings.
Well, you had some really amazing experiences, but some have been kind of scary. Overall, I mean, if you had the choice to not have these experiences, would you, or would you continue to have them?
That's a hard question. If I could pick which beings I wanted to have experiences with, then I'd say yes.
Well, that's not the question, though.
Overall, I guess I'd have to say that I feel like this is the reason I'm here, that it's my mission, and it's the main reason I'm on the planet, is to help awaken a sleeping world to their presence. And I've been told that over and over. And the way that I personally am doing it is by writing and sharing my experiences with other people and just trying to wake people up to the reality of this phenomenon. So I guess if I stop doing my work, maybe I won't have any reason to be here anymore. I mean, I have a lot of other reasons to be here, but I think this is a very, very important reason. And I'm just going to try to keep doing positive things and writing and sharing as much as I can, but it's not always easy. So.
Right. Well, I think you're doing amazing work, and both your books, this current one, I Forgot What I Wasn't Supposed to Remember, and Alien Jigsaw, really present a pretty comprehensive view of the whole phenomena, and the abduction phenomena in particular, and lots of new information as well. So you're definitely doing a great job, in my opinion.
Thank you so much for saying that. I really appreciate it. It's always good to get good feedback.
Right. Well, we're pretty much out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. It went by so fast. I really enjoyed it. And thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. And thank you for giving everyone this book, which they can download for free on your website, which is www.alienjigsaw.com. Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Katarina Wilson. And we've been talking about her amazing new book, I Forgot What I Wasn't Supposed to Remember. And if you want to know about abductions, if you want to know about the UFO cover-up and the military involvement in my labs and all this stuff, this is the book you want to read about. So that's our show for tonight, and I want to thank you all for joining us, and I hope you can join us next week when our guest is Brian Rigi, and he's going to be talking about Ghosts of Fort Worth. Until then, have a great evening, and keep your eyes to the skies.